And hello, everyone. Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
I'm Candace Lepage.
Cool.
I had
a whole idea about like the little improv section we do here, and then I forgot it.
That's what improv is all about. Planning and then forgetting.
Oh, good. I can skip those classes at the Making Box now. All right. And Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new superhero movie of the week, Shazam, because we do seem to get one every week now. Anyway, that's in the second half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the movie news from the past week, including... comic book comeback. Speaking of Shazam, it seems like the DC Comics movie universe has found its footing. But has it? We always like those.
That was my visual has it question mark.
And then a new study says that people who stream movies a lot also go to the physical movie theater a lot. So does that belie the conventional worries about Netflix and killing the multiplex? And then finally, today is Canadian Film Day, and so we'll talk about some of our favorite Canadian films in honor of the day. But first, Disney had a very busy weekend. They revealed the lineup for the new Disney Plus streaming service, which will also be coming to Canada, by the way. And they also released the first trailer for Star Wars Episode 9, which is called The Rise of Skywalker, which is...
problematic.
Thank you. Yes, problematic.
Problematic.
Because, it implies that there will be a rise of a Skywalker.
Yeah, it implies that there is a Skywalker in this film. And since we know the only Skywalker in the films died or ascended to some new level at the end of the excellent film by Rian Johnson, which was the best Star Wars film that's come out in at least a decade.
Yes.
And then we're just going to throw all that away.
Yeah, I think that was, like, my primary concern watching that trailer. And it's so much there was stuff I liked in it, like when Rey leaps over the TIE fighter. And I like the idea of, like, kind of seeing all the new guys together, like seeing Rey and Finn and Oscar Isaac. Like, on a mission together, because haven't really done that in the series yet. But yeah, there was the thing with the calling it Rise of Skywalker. There's also a clip where it shows them putting the Kylo Ren helmet back together.
Oh, I must have blanked on that one.
Right, but it seems like such, like, the way that Rian Johnson was able to recast it, and actually J.J. Abrams did this to extend as well. If you remember in Force Awakens, there's a scene where Rey says to Kylo Ren, it's like, you know, you're afraid you will never be as powerful as Darth Vader. And the helmet kind of emblemizes that. Like, he can't be a real monster like Darth Vader. He has to pretend and wear this fake helmet. And then Snoke mocks him for it in Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's putting the helmet back together, it seems like a...
we're all afraid to move past the original trilogy. We're all afraid we can't have Star Wars without Skywalkers and Darth Vaders and apparently Emperors. Maybe.
You know
what?
The Emperor's one of my favorite Star Wars characters, but when you hear the cackle at the end, I was like, oh, you're not really bringing him back.
I know, right? I'm like, come on. And even while it's always a pleasure to see Billy Dee Williams, I'm like, do we need Lando? Why are you doing this?
Yes, we need Lando.
I mean, I guess we kind of need Lando since literally nobody else can be in the film. And I don't know, I do know that Carrie Fisher does have some scenes that she had filmed, and we do see her in the trailer, so clearly she does have a role in this, and I don't know how I feel about that. I feel the one thing I think Rian Johnson did not do well is he missed an opportunity to give Carrie Fisher and General Leia a really good send-off. So maybe that will happen in this one, but I don't have a lot of faith.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what...
I'll be interested to see what they do with it. Because, I remember reading an interview with somebody from... I think it was Kathleen Kennedy, who said that the idea was that Force Awakens is Han Solo's movie, Last Jedi is Luke's movie, and then the last one would be Leia's movie. And so, I mean, they had to obviously rejigger. And there's been so much back and forth about, are they going to reuse footage of her? Are they not going to reuse footage of her? And it's like this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And yeah, I mean, I'm uncertain of it, but I would be interested to see what they do. And I trust J.J. Abrams to be able to handle that much.
Yeah.
To be able to find like some sort of satisfactory way to send Leia out on a high note.
I guess we can only see, and we know that we will all see, no matter how many of us sitting in the studio right now are like, you know, as someone was saying, like Star Wars fatigue set in, I don't know, 4 movies ago. But yet, I know that I will go see it.
Well, speaking of fatigue, one of the big things that's announced for the Disney Plus platform was this new Star Wars show, The Mandalorian. And I think it emblemized all the problems with Disney Plus, where it's like there's shows like The Mandalorian. There's also a crap ton of like Marvel shows that are really picking up. Like there's a Falcon and Winter Soldier show and a Loki show. Spoiler alert for, you know, getting killed in the first 5 minutes of Infinity War. He's back. And then there's Scarlet Witch and Vision show. But, you know, there's also, like, a High School Musical remake. There's all these, like, sort of docu-shows about, like, behind the scenes. And some of them do sound interesting. There's, like, one called Peyton Inc., which is about, like, some of the women who worked behind the scenes at Disney Animation and never got any credit. And I'd be interested in seeing that. But there's also a show called Cinema Relics. And it's kind of, like, just all about, like, cool Disney movie stuff behind the scenes. And it's like, how much of this
is it like cool from like way back? Like we're talking Witch Mountain and like the...
Some. I mean, some of it's like...
That would be...
The movies they mentioned were Tron, Muppet Movie, Pirates of the Caribbean, and Mary Poppins. So it's like a mix.
Okay.
It's a mix and match of Disney years. But I mean, you make a good point because one of the things they promised was like... This is going to be home to all the vault material.
That catalog. That, it's possible that that alone will convince me to spend money on it. Because there are, you know, I'm of the right age to buy my childhood back.
And there one are, streaming service at a time.
Yeah. And, you know, Saturdays at, what was it, 6 p.m. right after the Hinterland Who's Who's. When the world of Disney came on.
The wide world of Disney.
It was great. And I could do that again once a week.
Except that's not like kind of what's up on like the first round that they announced. It's, you know, it's all the Pixar stuff. It's the, you know, a couple of Marvel things. It's all the Star Wars stuff that's been released so far. And then, you know, like some of the big movies like, you know, Dumbo and
None of that makes me want to pay for it.
Right, and it's not the more interesting stuff, like all those old Davy Crockett movies or all those old Kurt Russell movies.
I would kill to watch. I would just spend whole weekends watching Kurt Russell's Disney
like,
era films.
Yeah, the computer wore tennis shoes and all that. Like, even, like, the more recent animated movie, like, the last of the Cell animated movies where they were doing, like, weird, funky things. Like Atlantis and Treasure Planet and, you know, those, The Emperor's New Groove, which I think was a hit if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I have it on VHS, you know, those big giant
the old
Disney
clams.
VHSs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it services A, nostalgia, B, self-promotional, and C, so they don't have to pay Netflix to carry their more recent movies anymore.
Yep. And they're in control of creating that content and making that money themselves rather than, you know, Marvel licensing content to Netflix, creating, you know, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and all that stuff.
Which are now all sadly done. It's not what I hoped it would be. Like, I in a weird way, I hope they would have done something, like, completely weird with it, like, put Song of the South on there, which, like, has absolutely, like, zero... like social value, but it does have like pretty strong film history and cinematic
relevance.
But can
they put it on there with no context? Like, do they have to put it on like a pop-up video where there's like, you know, they interrupt and...
Right, but I mean, that the streaming service would be a way to do that.
That's true.
Is that, you know, if I'm thinking of like, what's it called on Netflix? The Black Mirror Bandersnatch choose your own adventure
thing.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't actually, haven't
no,
watched
well, neither
that one
did
yet.
I, but I mean, it shows like the capability of the streaming platforms that you could do something like that on there. Song of the South is incredibly problematic, but, you know, one of the primary Disney theme songs, Zippity Doo Dah, that's from where it's from.
Yeah.
So and you know, there's problematic stuff like some World War II cartoons that they did. Even the crows in Dumbo.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways they could, like, you know, also turn it into like an archival thing, like maybe like a Disney Criterion. I mean, that's probably getting so far away from what they want to do, but it's what I kind of wish they wanted to do.
Also, I did think when you were talking about the one that's the, you know, women who've worked behind the scenes mm-hmm. and haven't gotten enough credit, I wonder, you know, if there'll be a Women of the John Lasseter. Like, maybe they'll talk about that a little bit, too, in their own streaming. Not likely.
It's not likely, but I mean, that is kind of the stuff, and with Disney, the original Walt Disney is such a character too in his own right. But Disney's a behemoth now, and they're not going to want to be the ones that throw wrenches in their own machine. To go into another Disney reference about Gremlins, and there you go. Anyway, speaking of wrenches in the machine, we were referencing a article in Guardian, which said that DC Comics is back in the movie game because Shazam is a hit, and it's number one 2 weeks in a row. And this follows up on Aquaman, which I think made $1.5 billion worldwide, and is a film I actually enjoyed a lot.
I haven't seen it, and I won't see it, much like I haven't seen and won't see Justice League, and I haven't seen and won't see BVS.
BVSDOJ.
Sure, whatever. Whatever we call that. And the only reason I really watched Wonder Woman was, one, to do this show review.
Yes,
and
that was our first episode.
Because I did recognize the relevant social sort of stuff around the film. But I have never once rewatched it and really don't plan to.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But Jason Momoa as Aquaman?
I'm not really a huge Momoa fan.
He's an acquired taste,
I understand. Yeah, I like him as a person. I think he's like an uber geek who's really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not the type of woman who drools over a very large chested, oiled body with long hair. It's not my thing.
Always the iconoclast.
Recognize that a lot of other women do. In fact, you know what? I do follow a Reddit board which posts pictures of attractive men and women sometimes for women viewers, watchers, lookers to appreciate. And there is actually a picture of Jason Momoa recording radio with very short hair, and he looks very good.
Is this recently cut
his
hair?
No. It's a way back photo.
Interesting. Because that would be like, I remember when Carrie Russell cut her hair when she was on Felicity, and it was an outrage.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened to Jason Momoa now. I think a lot of people are like you in that Man of Steel was a turnoff, and then Zack Snyder, he didn't even double down. He tripled down going into B versus S. And that sort of turned people completely off. So I think the wonder here isn't that, pun intended, isn't that the DC Comics thing is able to come back. Is that they were able to come back without having to just like completely scrap everything and do it again. I think there's been sort of struggles because, you know, you want to talk about how the thing is course corrected. Watch Justice League, because it's like a mess of intents and voices and trying to course correct, about 30 different ways.
Three different directors on it.
Yeah. But I mean, it was also that, you know, they had a vision that they were going to carry out, and then B versus S came out and they completely sort of rewrote the script there. And then after Wonder Woman came out, and people, surprise, surprise, people liked Wonder Woman. They tried to rewrite it again.
And then also Guardians of the Galaxy came out too, right? Yeah. And Guardians of the Galaxy, and was it Thor Ragnarok? Mm-hmm. But the more sort of comedic Marvel and DC went, oh, people want funny in their superhero films?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
It's not even just funny per se, because I think an argument can also be made that some of those movies go too much. And like in Guardians and Thor Ragnarok, it's kind of like baked into the cake, the comedy. Mm-hmm. But there were times in like Captain Marvel, I thought, I don't need a joke right now. It's okay to not joke sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in B versus S, there's no jokes at all. and then in Justice League, you have, you know, the Zack Snyder palette, mm-hmm. With occasional breaks of like Joss Whedon's voice coming out. And it's just, it's such a, I actually enjoy Justice League mostly because I left the movie theater without like feeling an overwhelming sense of dread in the world. Unlike BVS, mm-hmm. but, there's definitely a clash of things there. I think what makes Aquaman different, and I think what makes Shazam different, is that there's a confidence in accepting the outrageousness of the concepts. That, you know, Aquaman lives in the ocean, talks to fish, has ocean powers, and you know, that accepts the craziness of like the underwater Lord of the Rings style thing that the Aquaman comic's about. And I think Shazam does that too. Shazam is very much big meets Superman, and it rides that concept all the way.
Sure. I mean, I've never seen Aquaman, so I can't contribute a lot to this.
Well, I'm trying to say you should see Aquaman.
I will not.
Wow. All right.
I mean, I just like I'm also not going to see this new Joker film.
Well, and that's a different animal, too. I mean,
but is it? That's the really confusing thing, right? Because now DC, I think, runs the risk of going too all over the place with their things. Because now they have, you know, trying to sort of rebuild the DCEU with Aquaman, and then even further with Shazam. And now this Joker thing, which they claim is going to be part of it, totally off the rails. Mm-hmm. Suicide Squad, which I don't think at the time it came out they ever really tried to say was part of the DCEU, but now they're like, oh, but everybody loved Margot Robbie, so let's really wrap this in. And now it feels like they're just going in every direction, which would be fine if they were just standalone. Like, you don't have to create a whole universe the way Marvel did.
Right. And I mean, that could be the next test for them, is are they going too far in the other direction? Like, how do they like find balancing it? But the other thing I will say is that there's like kind of no plans for a Justice League too, so maybe they're okay with everybody playing in their own sandbox. But we'll find that out at a later date. We're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back with a couple more news items before we actually review Shazam. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, and we'll be right back. And that was a bit of Rush there, Fly By Night, because our movie this week features flight, and we're going to rush through these next news topics so we can get to the review.
Okie dokie.
Probably not. Anyway.
Flight and Canada. There's a double.
Oh, they are Canadian.
Yes, they are, despite what the Americans might want you
that
to think.
That takes me back. Anyway, so interesting study published, EY's Quantitative Economics and Statistics, which I subscribe to. I can't speak to everyone, but I wait for that stuff every week in my mailbox.
All right. Well, maybe I'll click that link. Click the button, sign up.
But they had an interesting insight that it turns out that people who stream movies more at home also go to the movie theater more. So people who stream over 8 hours per week also go to more movies, 9 or more movies in a year.
This is not remotely surprising to me.
No, well, not surprising, but I mean, it's nice to put data behind things.
Yeah, but the reality is, like, watching television mm-hmm. in the traditional manner, i.e. having cable, is an incredibly passive act. Mm-hmm. And a passive act that's become part of our regular, everyday sort of thing, mm-hmm. right? I would say starting sometime in the 90s, it became very strange for any household to not have cable. Not having cable was an act of like, no, we don't watch TV here. Everybody else just had cable. It was just sort of the normal, natural thing. And so most people who are still just doing the normal, natural thing of having cable, it's a very passive act.
Right.
But to go out to Netflix and subscribe, and or any of the other many, many, many streaming services,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that is an action they have to take. So people who are going to actually take that extra action are people who want to watch movies or television shows. I've already made the choice that I want to do this. It's not just turned on in the background for whatever. I do this because I really like this entertainment. So, of course, they're also going to actively go to the theater.
Yeah, I mean, I can put stuff on TV because I still do have cable, but I can put stuff on the TV and kind of, like, ignore it and put it on the background. But, Netflix makes you have to, like, be a participant. Like, you have to watch something because you're going to the trouble of, mm-hmm. you know, choosing something and bookmarking it or to watch later or what have you. It's interesting the way that thinking goes. It's also interesting because I wonder what effect it's going to have on this debate that, you know, Netflix is going to kill the movie theater and, you know, you can't have Oscar-nominated movies appear on Netflix or we can't nominate movies on Netflix for Oscars and all that sort of thing, because what it says is that, you know, cinephiles will watch good things wherever mm-hmm. they find them, and perhaps the onus is then on Netflix to sort of offer more opportunities for people to go to the theater too. And maybe Netflix starts as, I mean, because Netflix didn't start out as a streaming service, obviously. It started as a rent your DVDs
mail order rental.
Right. So, you know, maybe it's up to them to sort of look and try and match the, you know, where the viewers are, because it does seem like a discerning thing. And it's not a matter of laziness, it seems, that people are just choosing Netflix over going to the movies. Because mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is, it's not a choice. People watch Netflix, people go to the movies.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of what's what. Yeah.
Now with, again, so many streaming services, mm-hmm. each one that people subscribe to, again, is an active choice. It's a decision in, okay, I really want to watch these things,
mm-hmm.
and this is available on this service. So I have to pay for this service. The only people who are going to make those decisions are people who, as you say, it's a discerning choice. They know what they want to watch, and so they go watch it where they can,
yeah.
which means the theater sometimes, or many times. I mean, the theater seems to be more full every time I go.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you know, it depends on the time, obviously. It depends on the movie. But, you know, it's an interesting sort of what connects, and it's a certain alchemy that people have been trying to figure out for years, like movie marketers, I mean, and you never really know. For every, you know, every comic book movie, let's say, like that succeeds, there's at least a couple that fail. You know, what's the difference between, in this, the Guardian article in the topic we just talked about made this point. It's like, what's the difference between Venom and the Fantastic Four? What makes one of these terrible comic book movies succeed and the other one fail?
Well, and I think the better question is, what does succeed or fail mean?
Yeah.
At the box office? Like, if it succeeds at the box office, that doesn't mean the film succeeds.
Right.
Right? Like, that's the thing. They're talking about how Batman versus Superman was a box office success.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everybody, I don't know a single person who liked that film. mm-hmm. or will stand up in a theater and say, yes, I like this movie.
I was the one.
Yeah. So, right. So is that really success? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. No, and that's true, too. And you know, if it was down to a science...
Which EY's Quantitative Economics and Statistics is trying to make it a science.
They do good work. You know, it would make things, I think, a little bit more duller because I think, you know, the part of it is the joy of discovery. And I think it's the same thing. Not everything on Netflix is going to be a hit. And in fact, you can make the argument that Netflix does kind of itself a disservice, you know, the way some of its stuff is buried. You know, there's a ton of stuff on Netflix that you might not know is there because
they're trying to do things by an algorithm,
right.
So it seeks stuff out for you,
right?
And it hasn't figured out what Spotify does, which is how to find things. Spotify does a pretty good job with their algorithm of finding things you wouldn't have found, mm-hmm. and suggesting it to you. Mm-hmm. Netflix tends to just suggest mm-hmm. the same stuff.
Yeah, and based on sort of very broad categories. You know what you don't get with the same old stuff with?
What?
Canadian movies.
Well, I would beg to differ.
Oh, really?
Canadian movies, the same old stuff as everything else. I don't think that we have, like, a particular aesthetic or
no,
genre.
I don't think so either.
I certainly remember reading a YouTube comment once on a Canadian-made web series where someone said, this looks pretty good for a Canadian show.
I'm like, wow.
What does that mean?
Ringing endorsement.
What does that mean? Like, what? So despite people on the internet, mm-hmm. Canada does not have an aesthetic or genre.
Yeah. Right. No, and that's... that was kind of my point, but moving on. So today is Canadian Film Day. When you're listening to this on Wednesday, it is Canadian Film Day. It's a celebration of Canadian film, and there's actually like this new like
just one day of year, folks.
Just one.
That's what you get.
You just get one.
Women directors of horror film get a whole month, but Canadian films one day.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. But I mean, there's this new site. There's this new website called Made, which is supposed to celebrate Canadian film. It seems to more like celebrate Canadians who work in American films. But
yeah, and that is sort of the thing, right? It really, for instance, you could make a very strong argument that Shazam is a Canadian film.
Theoretically.
Right?
Yeah.
And is Shazam a more Canadian-made film than, say, Arrival, which was by a Canadian director, mm-hmm. Denis Villeneuve?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What is it that makes it a Canadian film? Filmed, cast and crew, everything done in Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Or a Canadian artist mm-hmm. at the helm
mm-hmm.
doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Well, I'm sure there's actually like regulations when it comes to...
Yeah, it's like those CanCon things. Yeah. That, yeah, it has to be like a certain percentage of people mm-hmm. who work on it and certain like... Anyway, we wanted to talk briefly about some of our favorite Canadian films, and since Candace was here, Candace was on the show when we did this like way back in 2017 when the show fell on Canadian Day, so we thought, let's talk about Canadian movies.
Mm-hmm.
So since it's Canadian Film Day and Candace is here and things work out that way, we thought we would continue that with more of our favorite Canadian movies.
Yeah.
So we'll just fill as much time as we can. You go first.
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to come up with that many. I was like, oh my goodness, what are Canadian films? I will say, because I certainly had the theme last time of horror films.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And again, this sort of falls into that, you know, what makes a film Canadian versus not Canadian. But you and I reviewed The Black Coat's Daughter.
Yes.
Which was so good.
It was really good, yeah.
So good. And it's called a Canadian film, so mm-hmm. even though I think the director is not Canadian, but it was all filmed in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
so what it checked whatever important boxes there are.
Mm-hmm. No, it's actually, you know, it's funny talking about like how there's no such thing as Canadian film. It's I think there's a very Canadian quality to that. It's
Was it pretty good for a Canadian show? Is that what you're saying?
No, but like, there's a lot of these Canadian movies have kind of like a bleakness to them.
It's our harsh cold winters.
Yeah, and there was definitely a feeling of that in Black Coat's Daughter. I chose a horror movie too. It was on my list the last time, but I didn't get to it. It was like on my runner-ups. But it's American Mary, which is by the Twisted Twins, Jen yes. and Sylvia Soska. And it's about the body modification scene. Mm-hmm. And but I think it's also, it kind of is prescient of the whole Me Too thing, because it's Catherine Isabel's character is a med student who goes to a party at her mentor's house, and it's implied that she was a victim of sexual assault, and she quits med school and becomes a full-time body modifier. And at the same time, she's getting revenge against some of the guys who assaulted her in the most horrific way possible. And it's gory because all the effects are practical. Jen and Sylvia Soska have like such a distinctive voice. It's really, really quite excellent. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
I have not had a chance to see that film yet, which is very disappointing. Mm-hmm. Because it both fills in my, you know, films by women that I want to see. Mm-hmm. It fills in the horror films by women and just horror films in general. And, it's not on any streaming service, because it's not on Shudder either. I feel
that
like I looked for
that seems like an oversight.
Yeah, I feel like I looked for it. Maybe it is now and it wasn't when I was looking for it originally.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, I watched it like old style rental a couple of like when it came out years ago. So
yeah.
Anyway.
I will say, moving away from the horror genre, but into a unique thing about Canadian films that I certainly appreciate as a French Canadian, Bon Cop, Bad Cop, which was this incredibly unique thing at the time. A 100% bilingual film.
That's
it
right.
was both in French and English, which made it, it was a comedy and it was great. And Colm Feore, I mean, put him in anything.
He's
just
good.
Put him in all of it.
He's good.
I'll watch it. So it was very entertaining and funny as it was, but then there were just certain things as a bilingual person that just, I just appreciated so much more. Again, too, and Bon Cop, Bad Cop 2 mm-hmm. came out just, 2-3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Which was great, because the first film was so good, and I think that they did a really great job. It's one of those things where they waited long enough
mm-hmm.
that they could bring out another one, have it be sort of a relevant story. It's a few, 10 years later or whatever. And it was, didn't quite have the same comedy or like just sort of smash as the first one. But the second one was an equally good film.
Mm-hmm. I did see the first one. I haven't seen the second one. I also have a crime one. It's a true, inspired by true events crime. Edwin Boyd. It's also called Citizen Gangster, but I refuse to use that title. But it's about a bank robber post-World War II in Toronto who kind of saw himself as like a Robin Hood-style character. But, you know, he was a bank robber and he was kind of doing it for the thrill of it. You know, it's basically implied in the movie that he had some kind of PTSD. That, you know, he wasn't able to sort of cope with life, you know, being a blue collar worker and supporting his family. And he got this kind of thrill out of robbing banks, although, you know, it gets him into a whole mess of trouble, obviously. But it's a really great lead performance by Scott Speedman, who is also Canadian. Shot in Sudbury, doubling for 1950s Toronto, too.
Yeah. Another one that I don't actually know, again, how it qualifies, but it stars Colm Feore as a sort of assassin for hire, and Dave Foley, and it's The Wrong Guy.
I'm laughing already.
Which was a highly underrated comedy in just this sort of absurd fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Colm Feore is one of those actors. I mean, he's a Shakespearean actor, but yet
he lives in
comedy
Stratford.
So well.
Yeah.
And so he's just playing this assassin who killed a person, happens to be the boss of Dave Foley's character. Dave Foley walks in just after the assassination happens and finds the body and is so dumb that he thinks that, oh my God, people are going to think I am doing it. So he runs away And for whatever reason, the assassin then is like, oh, I've got to, why is this guy tailing me? Because it just sort of, and then there's cops that are bumbling. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, it is every stereotype you can imagine mm-hmm. and hilarious. And Dave Foley should come back to Canada.
Oh, I thought he was supposed to live here.
I think he has. No, he had some issues with owing his ex-wife some money.
That's right.
But I think that he might have. I think he's taking care of that now.
Okay. On that note, I will. My third and final pick is a movie called Amal, which is kind of like an Indian set Charles Dickens
movie.
So much
classier than my film.
It's like an Indian set Charles Dickens movie about an auto rickshaw driver who is very poor, but is in his heart a decent man, and he gives a ride to a very wealthy man one day who ends up like leaving a mall his entire fortune. Well, there's two stories about how a mall is caring for this girl who was a purse snatcher, and he sells his rickshaw so that she can get a surgery she needs. And then on the flip side, this man's family are tearing each other apart because this billionaire's left this auto rickshaw driver. Nobody can find his fortune, and there's a really sad twist in the end. But I mean, it's very emotional and very down to earth. It's a beautiful movie. It's no Wrong Guys, but anyway, speaking of Wrong Guys, maybe. We'll review Shazam coming up next, but after a bit of music, not Rush this time, but still Canadian. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Boys got a hall pass?
Oh, us?
Yeah. You.
You look like you're up to something.
Our dad's picking us up. He got held up at the business office.
The business office, huh?
Look, parents or guardians must appear physically to check out students.
Okay, well, you hear that, Dad?
Hey!
Shazam!
Oh, hey there, son. Oh, hey there, other son that I also have that's related to that son I just passed in the hallway. I'm so sorry I'm late. I got held up at the business office. Anyway, this is me appearing physically to check my son's out of school. So thank you so much for keeping him safe, Detective Moron.
It's Moran.
It sure is. That is a clip from Shazam. It is the new film from David F. Sandberg, and it stars Zachary Levi, Mark Strong, Asher Angel, Jack Dylan Grazer, and Jaimin Hansu. And as I said earlier, it's Big Meets Superman, and that's all I needed from this, and it was fun.
Sure, I don't know about the big part, because I don't know, maybe it was my gender, but the movie Big was never that big in my life.
It could be, I mean, just like the core concept of, you know.
Yeah, but yes, I get it. It's, yes, I agree. I think that, it was fun. That was kind of the whole, I went in, you know, we talked about this at our end of year or looking to next year, sort of most anticipated. Mm-hmm, and I put Shazam on my list, which, you know, despite everything I have already said about DCEU in this episode and every episode for the last like 3 or 4 years.
We haven't been on that long.
2 years, 3 years.
Almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. There you go. Yeah, it was a shock to everybody. What? You want to see Shazam? And I think it was great. I mean, Zachary Levi, mm-hmm. I think, was exactly the right person mm-hmm. to play this character and exactly the right person to bring some levity mm-hmm. and wonder. That's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
Wonder to superhero films.
Yeah, there's a certain path you have to walk through to sell the idea that you're a grown up kid you're a kid in a grown up's body, but also to like also not make it creepy.
Yeah.
that you know you can see them as peers, even though one is an adult man and the other one is I don't know how old the kid who plays Frankie is in real life, but he's supposed to be like 13, 14.
Yeah.
And I mean Zach Levi is a really funny dude.
Yep.
And the fact that he got super buff and he mm-hmm. wears that costume very, very well. It embraces the kind of silliness, the light up lightning yes. bolt on the chest and
yeah.
the wizard giving him powers. And it just goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think what Sandberg really does well, and I wouldn't make the argument that I think any one of these comic book movies does really well, is just sort of embrace the simplicity of the idea. And I think the movies always go wrong to an extent when they try to clutter it up with too many other things. And I think of Green Lantern a bit. Green Lantern is a pretty simple concept. It's training day in space. But you wouldn't be able really to tell that from the Green Lantern movie.
Sorry, I'm still on the training day in space because you're exactly right.
Yeah, it's training day in space. And I think that there's somewhere in the middle of Shazam, and it's like a two hour 10 minute film, but somewhere in the middle I was like, isn't there supposed to be like some supervillain to come along and challenge him? And I think it was shortly mm-hmm. thereafter Mark Strong finds out Shazam is a thing and confronts him. But so much of the film just kind of isn't worried about the typical superhero stuff of like finding the villain and the villain's motivation. Yeah. And
well, because I mean, this does the best job of origin stories.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that the first Spider-Man, Sam Raimi Spider-Man, was sort of the same thing, where it really isn't about the villain. It's actually about the character
mm-hmm.
and their origin and the growth. And the how do you go from being just a regular person to suddenly having a lot of superpowers and not being prepared for it remotely, not being trained for it, having, I don't want to say having no moral compass, but not having like being specifically told
right.
about responsibility and about right. what this means. It's just like, here, you suddenly have all these things.
Right.
And you can do whatever you want with it.
Right, and he does the kid thing, which is like to go into a store and buy a beer and you know, like be a busker and do selfies and it's
because really like what else, you know, at 14 years old, no matter what, life does not have a lot of responsibilities.
Right, yeah.
Right, and even for this kid, Billy Batson, who has not had a good life and is a foster kid,
mm-hmm.
You know, was lost from his mother in a crowded place. And, you know, spends the entire time trying to find his mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his only responsibility in life, I think, as far as he is concerned, is to find his family, find mm-hmm. his mom. And, you know, and he feels, as we find out later, he feels guilty like it was his fault
mm-hmm.
that he was lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, saving people and using his powers for good are totally not
right
his natural inclination.
Yeah, and there's a nice arc that, you know, sort of learning the value of these things. And not just learning the value of getting power, not to spoil anything, but there's a good message about how you share power.
Yeah.
And it's a twist I didn't see coming, even though I am kind of vaguely aware of the Shazam comic books
yeah.
and the series of characters. But I was really pleased with that there was like this like kind of solid message that power isn't something that you're granted then use, even if you're using it for good, but that there is an aspect of power too of sharing that power
mm-hmm.
and giving everybody the ability to be heroes themselves, which I think is also part of the DNA of what superhero stories are about.
Yeah, and like that's what I really love about this film. I mean, I saw it twice actually, because I saw it mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago when it did its special like sneak preview.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason? I don't know, but I took advantage of it and I went to go see it.
It was good, and they were eager to show people.
Yeah, and so I went to see it again this weekend, and it was sort of interesting because the first time I saw it, and I really enjoyed it both times. It stands up to viewing, but I didn't quite get the same feeling as the first time. But the first time, and I think that it's what's really great about this film, is that without being too sickly sweet, too over the head, it really does have a compelling message of finding your home, finding your family, choosing your people, and choosing your power, which I think is something that we could all learn. But I especially love that this film is very, very clearly targeted to like 8 to 16 year olds.
Yes,
like this is a family film.
Yes.
Period. End of story. And when I saw it the first time, I really thought, I was like, oh, I can't wait to read the angry fanboys on the internet who complain about this because it's not made for them. Surprisingly, I have now. I haven't sought it out,
right?
But I haven't felt the amount of pushback on it that I thought there might be.
Well, it's the main character in the movie also doesn't have 2X chromosomes.
That's true. But I didn't want to be the one to suggest that that was a big part of it. But I did wonder. I wondered if the, like, 40-year-old men who traditionally go to see these movies, and all of the other DCEU movies are clearly targeted to that age group, to that group of people, I wondered how they would take this film, because it is not for them whatsoever.
No, it's a callback to, like, sort of 80s, like, family films. Like, there's a very strong Goonies vibe. And I don't mean that to be, like, it's, you know, there's no kind of stakes or anything like that. But it's also not afraid to be, to, you know, put a little bit of fright in the kids. And, like, Sandberg clearly shows off that he, you know, he comes from a horror background. There's one character who dies in a particularly horrible way, and then they're the, I mean, I wasn't pleased generally with the Sin creatures. I mean, they look they all look like the same two glee plobs, but it but you know, the scene where he goes into the board meeting to the villain, I mean, get payback against his father and his brother for dismissing him all those years ago, that is harrowing.
Yes, but on second watch, not a drop of blood.
No,
we see, except for one actual sort of chomp,
right,
we do not see any actual violence, because I did, I was like, I remember this being, as you say, really harrowing. And then I'm watching it going, oh yeah, no, they totally, like, this is so PG.
Yes, but
great job.
But it puts the idea in your head, right? That these people died in a vicious, horrible way. It's great that Sandberg's able to sort of tune into that. I mean, and there's, like, his adults still, like, going to buy beer, and you know, there's a scene where he, in full Shazam costume, goes into a gentleman's club. But I mean, not that you see the inside of the gentleman's club, but it's not afraid to sort of realize that, you know, sometimes kids have, kids of this age trapped between the kid and adult worlds kind of can go both ways. And it was very much like that as well, although a bit more R-rated. But it's nice that Sandberg, you know, could thread that needle, that it could be a family film but still have the, you know, the little bits that could give the, you know, the young kids, and there were young kids in the screening I was in, give them a bit of a, shall we say, a naughty thrill, you know, about what they would, what could, they could and would do if they could suddenly turn into an adult.
Shout out to all of the child actors.
Yeah, they were good.
In this film. They were all great. Asher Angel, who plays young Billy Batson, and Jack Dylan Grazer, who plays Freddy, of course, were, you know, the two sort of, you know, you saw most often, and they were great. But, like, the kid who played Eugene was great. And the younger Darla, that was her name. That actress must have been, what, like, six, seven?
Probably.
Yeah.
In that neighborhood.
Yeah. She was great.
And the couple who play the adopted parents, I don't know if they're a couple in real life, but the two actors, Cooper Andrews and Marta Milans, were really, really good. And I saw somebody on the internet, like, posted, like, a little meme of the two of them. It said, like, the real heroes of Shazam. And it's, yeah, it's nice that to see just like good, decent, salt of the earth people.
Yeah. Well, and there's even the shout out, right? As they're racing off in the van to go find Billy, and the bumper sticker says, "I'm a foster mom. What's your superpower?" And it's like that is exactly it, right? Like, sure, yes, there are literal superpowers, but there are also really important superpowers that we can all do. And I mean, and that's part of the whole thing with Freddie too, right? Like Freddie, who was the kid who was bullied, and you would think that possibly the second he would get superpowers, he would become, you know, it would all go to his head. He didn't get superpowers, but maybe because he didn't, he was also the voice of reason. He was also the one telling Billy all the time, like, no, this is not what you're supposed to do with this. So there is still the very human, very grounded in reality ways to be a superhero.
Right, and Freddy also, it's not explained why he walks with a crutch. But, you know, it's also good in sort of balancing that, you know, Billy has someone to look to who, you know, is trying to overcome his own physical disability. And there's an actual scene where Freddy, you know, explains to him, like, you know, if I could do what you could do. it's not about spite. It's about, like, gall that, you know, inside Freddy's head is all this knowledge about, you know, what a superhero is supposed to be, and Billy isn't doing any of those things, and but it's all handled, and it's not handled in a sort of the way an adult would think about it, and the script does a really good job of sort of getting into the mind of a kid and what a kid would think of his friend misusing his superhero abilities while still getting at to the essential heart of what we like about superhero characters.
Also, entire Shazam family, brought to you by the cast of CW.
You know, and it's interesting. All those actors were like somewhat recognizable.
Yeah. Ross Butler, OG Reggie from Riverdale. Yes. Nice to see him again. Adam Brody, of course, from the OC.
I think DJ Corona was one.
Yes, right. The Pedro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who Mary was. I think it was Michelle Borth.
Yes.
And yeah, Darla was Megan Good because I recognized her. Yeah, no, it's. I thought it was great casting. They look like the grown-up versions of the characters. And the Mary one's tricky because Mary is supposed to be like 17, 18.
But I know, right? I did wonder. I was like, are they... why do they even bother casting an older actor?
Speaking of CW shout-out, I like seeing John Glover back as the father of a villain.
Yes. He does a good father of a villain.
Yeah. He makes all the bad guys rule the day.
Yeah.
And I mean, and we talked a lot about sort of the serious, but the scene where Mark Strong is doing his supervillain speech.
Oh my God. That is so hilarious. It is perfect.
It was a hilarious scene. It's funny. It's got heart. You know, it's going to appeal to a mass audience. Like, the kids can go and watch it, and parents don't have to be worried about their kids watching it. And parents will get a kick out of it, too. Mm-hmm. And it's a great movie. And kudos to David Sandberg and the gang.
And one more shout out to our friend and past coworker, Lavina Yavari, playing the store clerk who gets robbed and sells Shazam beer.
She did a great job pointing the way to beer.
Yes, yes.
I remember seeing Lavina. Sorry, I was getting her names wrong.
Lavina.
But I remember seeing Lavina on it's like a background player on Lost Girl like years and years ago. I was like, oh, that's nice. Someone I know is an extra. But
yeah,
you know, she's doing good work. So shout out to her, definitely. I guess we'll have to leave it there.
Let's go see Shazam again.
Sure, why not? What else do we have to do? And I guess that'll be it for our show this week. You can stay connected to us at our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find all our past episodes there. You can find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. And Candace, where can people find you on the internets?
I am on the internets at Sinn48, CINN48. I apparently do stuff there. If you tweet me, I will tweet you back.
Oh, this is sold. You can find me tomorrow here on CFRU at 5 p.m. for News and Politics and Open Sources Guelph with my good friend and ally, Scotty Hertz. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca for political stuff. And you can stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits. And we will see you then.